Ukrainian and Russian forces are fighting in eastern Ukraine as Russia steps up its offensive to capture the region. And Ukrainian fighters are refusing to surrender in Mariupol, which has been under siege for weeks. So let's look at Russia's strategy and how its concentrated efforts in the east may unfold. We have on the line Jeffrey Edmonds, a Russian military analyst at CNA, a think tank. He's worked at the White House and the CIA. Jeffrey, welcome back.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Ukrainian President Zelensky has said the battle for the Donbas has begun, the eastern part of Ukraine. And yet the Pentagon is telling us they're seeing limited offensive operations so far in that area by Russia. So how do we square that?
So I think what we might be seeing is preparatory actions on the part of the Russians. They've had to draw units from Belarus, from other parts of Ukraine, and from Russia itself in order to build up enough combat power for what they think they need to conduct offensive operations. One reason we may not be seeing a very aggressive front from the Russians is that they've really taken on a lot of casualties. And so they're having to cobble together a force that's been pretty beat up.
Do you anticipate that after this buildup, we will see significant moves by the Russian army?
I think we're going to see the Russians try to take the remainder of those oblasts, which are kind of like provinces. I think they're focusing on that because that's all they can do to try to pull some kind of semblance of victory out of this that they can sell to the Russian people. So I think we're going to see that. The real question is, how concerted is that going to be? How strong is it going to be? And are they actually going to be able to do it?
And let's say they do succeed. How would that fit into the broader Russian strategy here in Ukraine?
Well, I think what it would signify is that the Russians had succeeded in their revised strategy, right? This was clearly not their plan from the beginning, even though they claimed that it was. It was very clear from the beginning that the plan was to seize Kyiv and Kharkiv and some other major cities with the belief that the resistance, the Ukrainian military, would just fall away. That clearly was not the case. They were unable to do that. And this is an attempt to kind of salvage something from their entire operation in Ukraine.
And then would it be a possibility that they can somehow declare victory and then this starts to fade a little bit? I mean, is that a potential move toward an end game here?
I think it is. I think that the most the Russians can hope for right now and what they're trying to do is to take control of Luhansk and Donetsk, go home, declare victory, and that's the end of it. And in a sense, we have something that's very similar to what we had before all this started.
Right, the 8 years of fighting that led up to this. I think last time we spoke to you, we mentioned Russian troops having had notable problems, supply lines, food, fuel. You mentioned they've struggled to take key cities. Mariupol has held on for a long time. Does it seem to you that Russian military leaders have learned and are adapting? So I think
adapting is giving them a lot. I think what they're having to do is, again, try to salvage this. It's not as if they've adapted and decided to take on a new military objective. It's that this is all they can do at this point, because they've taken so many casualties and because, you know, the war has gone so poorly for them so far.
Yeah. You know, on the show, we've also talked about Vladimir Putin's advisors perhaps not telling him the full truth, giving him a rosier version of reality. First of all, does that make sense to you? And if it does, do you think that that problem, this echo chamber problem, is being acknowledged by the Russian leaders?
So I think the echo chamber problem was really formative in the lead up to this operation, because it's very clear they thought that they were not going to meet much resistance at all. And I think that does square with the idea that Russian intelligence services would not be telling Putin anything other than what he wanted to hear. That being said, though, I mean, Putin clearly knows he doesn't control Kyiv. He doesn't control Kharkiv. So I think he's had a pretty rude awakening to the fact that he really didn't understand what he was getting into.
You know, on the military front, as we watch what happens next, what military advantages do the Russians have?
So in the east, it is a different fight. And there are really three things to focus on. One is that the Russian logistics are more secure because they pass through separatist-held area into Russia. The logistics is simplified and a bit more protected. The second, with the appointment of General Dvornikov, their command and control is a little more succinct. It's simpler. It's probably more effective. And the third thing I would say is that, you know, that area is a smaller, more confined, contiguous geographic area, which makes it easier to concentrate combat power. But again, the thing that they're challenged with is that they have a force that's really taken on heavy casualties with low morale, and that might end up being determinative in all of this.
You mentioned the new commander here, General Dvornikov. U.S. officials say he was responsible for brutality against civilians and others in Syria in the past. What do we know about him and how he might direct this fight?
So he does have a lot of experience, and he was in Syria and was one of the main leaders there. But what I think is important to remember, you know, we've kind of labeled him a butcher, and I think that's correct, but he's not the only one, right? Commanders in Syria rotated through, and Russian brutality in Syria lasted the entire time that they've been there. This is more of a function of Russian military command in general and not just one individual. But I think that, you know, he does have significant combat experience, and if he's actually in charge and can bring units together, this might look more like a traditional Russian military operation than the kind of haphazard stuff we've seen so far.
I guess speaking of military operation, we have been watching Mariupol, the port city, so closely. And should we assume that the apparent Russian strategy there, surround and choke off cities, indiscriminately hit civilian targets, may be replicated in the east going forward? We also saw that in Syria.
Yes, I think that is the normal Russian approach to cities. I mean, it was true in Syria and it's been true in Ukraine. Mariupol, in particular, is part of that geographic strip that runs from Crimea into Russia. And so for the Russians to really control that portion of the east, that's really a key city for them to control. And I imagine any other city that resists will face similar types of just brutality and horrible like siege warfare tactics.
I want to ask you about the Russian ship, the Moskva, that the guided missile cruiser that sank in the Black Sea. Ukraine said it hit the ship with missiles. The United States supported that account. Russia says it was an unrelated fire. What do we know now about what happened and whether this is a significant moment?
So it is significant. I think we can be fairly confident that the Ukrainians were successful in hitting the Moskva with two Neptune anti-ship missiles, which are fairly new missiles that the Ukrainians themselves developed since 2014. The few pictures that we have of the Moskva clearly show a detonation on its left side that probably triggered a bigger explosion, you know, that ended up sinking the ship. It's significant not so much in that the Moskva was this incredibly militarily powerful ship, right? It had a hard time attacking targets on shore. It had some anti-aircraft capability, but it's the symbolic nature of the Moskva, the head of the Black Sea Fleet, you know, the role it played in naval diplomacy. And ironically, this is actually the ship that Gorbachev and his crew were on when they went for the Malta summit and the declaration of the end of the Cold War. And so there's a certain irony in the fact that it was the Moskva that sank. Mm.
Yeah, well, back in 91, was it?
Right.
And finally, as far as the role of the U.S. and other countries that are providing military support to the Ukrainian side, what's important to know, I guess, about the bolstering, the help coming from the U.S. and other countries?
I mean, I still think the West is providing what they need to provide to the Ukrainians. They could use more. I mean, in a certain sense, this is a different fight. And so things like tanks and helicopters and anti-aircraft platforms, those could all be used in this kind of fight. And javelins aren't just useful in cities. Javelins are also useful in the field, but it's also spring. And so you have a certain amount of concealment from vegetation that's growing. And so I think, you know, continuing to provide them with ammunition and these, especially the more advanced platforms, will definitely help them in the fight against the Russians.
Yeah. Jeffrey Edmonds is a Russian military analyst at CNA, a think tank here in Washington. Jeffrey, thanks for the time.
Thanks so much for having me.